Hi, this is Thorgy Thor. I don't get lost. I don't get upset. I just keep doing it. And I really do feel like just doing my show is the largest act of rebellion that you could possibly do when we have standing ovations and we're sold out anyway.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Italian top court recognizes lesbian co-moms of IVF baby. Russian court fines Apple for no promo homo violations. And the drag violin of Thorgy Thor. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Natalie Munoz.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 24th, 2025. A lesbian couple in Italy can both be legally recognized as the mothers of a child they conceived via in vitro fertilization. This thanks to a historic constitutional court ruling. Justices on the country's highest court decided that denying legal recognition to the non-biological mother would be unconstitutional, violating the rights of the child to care, education, and emotional continuity from both parents. Only married heterosexual couples have the right to access medically assisted reproductive services in Italy. Single women and women in same-gender unions must get them abroad. Until now, legal recognition of lesbian co-moms in Italy depended on your location. Some local governments have bucked a 2004 law that bans registering the non-biological mother as a child's co-parent on the birth certificate. That angers far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, whose election campaign included vocal opposition to what she called gender ideologies and the LGBT lobby. To quote the High Court's May 22nd ruling, "These divergent outcomes reflect a shifting social reality to which the legislature has yet to respond." Italy only granted same-gender couples the lesser status of civil unions in 2016. That makes it a prominent exception to marriage equality standards in Europe. Under pressure from the politically powerful Roman Catholic Church, queer couples in civil unions are specifically barred from adopting children. Lesbian mother Chiara Soldatini told Agence France-Presse she would only uncork the champagne when all those families with two dads can toast with me. Champagne time may be in sight, even before the ink on the co-mom's High Court ruling is dry. All surrogacy services are banned in Italy, and non-biological co-dads are prevented from adopting their spouse's children. However, Agence France-Presse reports that a court in Pesaro, northern Italy, has overturned that rule by approving a non-biological gay co-dad's adoption of his spouse's child conceived via surrogacy abroad.
Moscow's Taganski District Court is levying heavy fines on tech giant Apple for violating laws banning the promotion of non-traditional sexual relations. The court charged Apple with three different administrative offenses and a separate charge of failing to restrict users' access to content that is illegal in Russia. More specific information is not available because Apple's lawyers asked that this week's hearings be closed to the public. The fines totaled 10.5 million rubles. That's about $97,000. Russian President Vladimir Putin gleefully signed the 2022 so-called no-promo homo law to cover the entire population with the same ban on the promotion of LGBT propaganda that had applied to minors. Russia's Supreme Court in 2023 declared some mythical international LGBT movement to be extremist. That makes pride celebrations and all public advocacy for queer equality acts of terrorism. Apple has yet to publicly comment.
The same Texas federal judge who tried to ban the abortion pill, mifepristone, now thinks that he can overrule a U.S. Supreme Court decision that banned workplace bias based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Far-right Texas State Attorney General Ken Paxton had challenged guidelines established by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission under the Biden administration in 2021. The guidelines were intended to bring EEOC into compliance with the Supreme Court's 2020 anti-bias workplace decision, Bostock v. Clayton. The agency recommended that employers honor their workers' preferred pronouns and allow them to wear dress code-appropriate clothing and have access to sex-segregated bathrooms and other facilities that conform to their gender identity. Judge Matthew Kaczmarek of the Northern District of Texas decided this week that those anti-discrimination provisions in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 do not, in fact, protect LGBTQ people. He called the EEOC guidelines inconsistent with the text, history, and tradition of Title VII and recent Supreme Court precedent. The right-wing Judge Shopper's favorite claims that the Bostock decision only forbids discriminatory termination, but that anti-queer harassment and other forms of bias are okay. It's highly unlikely that Kaczmarek's ruling will withstand further legal scrutiny.
Iowa's ban on the discussion of sexual orientation or gender identity in public schools up to the sixth grade can be enforced, but the restrictions can only apply to mandatory classroom education. U.S. District Court Judge Stephen Locker said that schools must allow elective programs on campus that address those subjects. Locker's divided decision allows requiring school officials to out students to their parents, while it approves teachers mentioning their same-gender partners. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds had enthusiastically signed the law passed by the Republican majority in the state legislature.
Thousands of transgender people are set to lose their gender-affirming health care under U.S. President Donald Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives approved it in the wee hours of the morning this week. It gives the country's wealthiest people major tax breaks on the backs of lower-income citizens who will lose coverage under federal Medicaid and Medicare programs. It particularly prohibits coverage under those programs for all gender-affirming health care nationwide, for adults as well as for minors. Medicaid is a joint federal-state program that offers health care to people with low incomes. It currently serves about 152,000 transgender people, according to the queer think tank Williams Institute. Trump was reportedly on the phone haranguing several wavering Republican Congress members to vote for the bill. In the end, two Republicans joined all Democrats to oppose it, resulting in a slim one-vote majority approval. The bill now goes to the Senate, where a noteworthy number of Republican members have expressed misgivings, either because the cuts to Medicaid and Medicare are too harsh, or because they're not draconian enough. A simple Republican majority may not be enough to pass it in its current form. If the Senate makes any changes, the bill must go back to the House. Senate Majority Leader John Thune says getting the bill to the president's desk by Independence Day, July 4th, is his goal and the aspiration. But the reality is more complicated. There may be time for queer advocates and other opponents to scuttle the worst parts of it.
In Paris, a giant steel star wand lay on the ground in the public gardens near the Bastille Plaza, a new monument to honor the queer victims of the Holocaust. A plaque on the memorial designed by French artist and queer activist Jean-Luc Vernant reads, "Stuck in the ground, this wand is not only magic, like a memory that we would like to bury, a part of forgotten memory. It emerges from the earth to call us to remember. The prerogative of fairies, the starry wand offers a matte black stainless steel side and a mirrored side, evoking the dark hours of history as much as hope and light. Leaning towards visitors, the shadow it casts can appear as a shelter and as a threat that history will repeat itself." The official unveiling was on May 17th. The International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, or IDAHABIT. Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo said historical recognition means saying this happened, and we don't want it to happen again. Deputy Mayor of Paris and a longtime LGBTQ plus rights activist, Jean-Luc Romero, echoed that theme. He said, "We didn't know, unfortunately, that this monument would be inaugurated at one of the worst moments we're going through right now. We've never experienced such setback in the United States with what's happening to trans people." Amsterdam, Barcelona, Tel Aviv, and Sydney all have monuments to the queer victims of the Holocaust. While more solid numbers don't exist, many historians believe that from 5 to 15,000 LGBTQ people from across Nazi-occupied Europe were sent to concentration camps during World War II.
Finally, a 55 by 35 foot transgender pride flag was unfurled this week on El Capitan, the famed and challenging wall climbing site in California's Yosemite National Park. Organizers tout it as the largest flag ever hung on the mountain. One of the lead organizers was Patagonia, a well-known drag queen and environmentalist. Their media statement proclaimed in part, "Trans people are natural and trans people are loved. We are done being polite about trans people's existence. Call it a protest, call it a celebration. Either way, it's giving elevation to liberation. Trans existence is not up for debate. We can only make progress when we embrace diversity, not erase it. Let this flag fly higher than hate."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 24th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Munoz. Stay healthy.
And I'm David Hunt. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Terrence Stamp, Bernadette in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Pride Month is upon us, and fear of the Trump administration has led to many venues canceling LGBTQ plus concerts around the U.S. Drag performances and anything even vaguely associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion are the prime targets for censorship. That's what makes a Los Angeles event featuring a RuPaul's Drag Race favorite special. And This Way Out's Brian DeShazer knows it's special for an even more intriguing reason.
Thor G. Thor, drag queen and superstar, welcome to This Way Out.
I like that superstar. That's good.
We will be talking about drag, believe you me. But I wanted to talk to you first about your love of music and the violin and the upcoming concert at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Phil called Classical Pride on July 10th. But let's talk about music, because I have a feeling that's where things began before drag sort of interwove with it.
I'll say, I don't know which one was birthed first, but I was a kid with lots of energy and didn't matter where they took me, my family. I was always running around doing cartwheels and backflips and they couldn't take me to any family function. I went to a museum, MoMA, and I saw a tiger in a Gauguin painting and I went on to the painting and I went, "Tiger," and it fell off the wall. So, oh yeah. Oh no, we were escorted out. Yeah, at the MoMA. And that wasn't a joke. And I was like, that was me like when I was a kid. So needless to say, my family put me in anything and everything just to get me away. My parents were like, "Let's put you back in music," because I was playing violin when I was little. But now they were like, "We really need to put you into something." And I had private teachers and, you know, ever since I was 9 or 10. And it kind of just snowballed from there.
But I love the, you know, the violin and the viola. So you have the two instruments playing together, correct?
Well, yeah, my private teacher was smart enough when I was playing violin and I had a tremendous, very fast growth spurt when I was young and my arms went, and then, so she goes, you know, "We're going to put you on viola, which is a bigger, deeper instrument." And that was actually really genius of her to put me on because I was very, very good at viola as well. And by the time I got into conservatory for college, I got there and I got in on my audition on violin. But when I got there, they said, "You play viola?" So they put me in every chamber group, in everything. And I like got a dual degree just because I played so much viola. But, you know, as a freshman in undergrad, I was playing with doctorate majors in, you know, Shostakovich string quartets and stuff. So I was a good violist, I guess. I don't know.
Why is there, is it more rare to find somebody who likes the viola rather than the violin, or is it just a less popular instrument?
And I'm going to, here's the thing. I'm going to watch my mouth, what I say, because there's going to be string players listening. And, you know, it's just funny because I've met violists who are some of the best violists I've ever played with, and they started on violin. But then you have all the violists who are like true violists who are very proud to be violists. And I'm like, well, you know, who cares? But as long as you can play well. But so I'm a violinist transfer. And it doesn't matter, you know. But it is kind of rare to find like a really, really great violist that you love playing with. I'll say that.
So with the upcoming concert at the Hollywood Bowl on July 10th, you're amongst Anthony Roth Costanzo, a great pal of mine, countertenor, Jamie Barton, who I adore. How did you become part of that concert? And just give us a sort of sense of how important it is that an organization like this is doing a classical pride rather than, well, Diana Ross at the Hollywood Bowl is always pride, but this one is specifically shifting the gaze a little bit, right?
Yes. Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's just an honor to actually be invited to perform in a stage that, I mean, it was like Rolling Stones and the Beatles, you know what I mean? Like, this is like icon, this wonderful place to perform. And, what an honor. Yeah. So I'm going to bring my own little flavor to it. And it's nice because I love being like the only, I mean, I'm not the only one on the globe, but I'm the only one that I've met so far that's like, hey, let's play together, drag violinist and violist. So I love that I keep being invited. I love it. I love, love, love it. So I'm excited to bring it. And this is just a guest spot at this wonderful show to kind of, what did you say, change the gaze. I like that. Of what's going on, and to feature a bunch of, you know, queer artists on a stage, you know, it's kind of cool.
Particularly in the classical genre, they're playing, you know, Tchaikovsky and Bernstein.
That's Bernstein. Anyway, so it's a tango, which tangos are always gay to me. But it's very sexy and fun, and I'm going to make it very, very gay, whether they like it or not. And but it's a really, really kind of sexy tango that allows me to really, you know, really play some great violin lines and then also add a little bit of drag humor to it. And, you know, I always say this. Geez, I've said this so many times, but it's true. I go to the orchestra every time and I say, hi, how many of you bought a ticket tonight because you saw me on television or you like drag? You know, you watch drag, right? And it's usually about half the audience going, yeah. And then I say, all right, shush. How many of you are season ticket holders to the symphony and you have no idea what the hell you're doing here? And it's about the other half. And everyone laughs. And I go, listen, this is what has become my small responsibility in this classical and queer world at this point in time, is that I'm being afforded this lovely opportunity to come out here and do this. And look to your left and to your right. You know, there's queer kids, there's trans kids, and there's like older married straight couples with money, and they're donating to the symphony. And I said, this might be a concert that you're sitting next to somebody that you might never sit next to them at any other type of concert. So let's just agree to have a good time tonight. And I said, I hope that some of the drag lovers tonight come back to the symphony, buy a ticket and support your local symphony, even though I'm not here. And vice versa, I want to see some of the older folks at the nightclub supporting their drag performers at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Monday night going, yes.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I was going to ask you when the blend of the violin and your drag happened, because what you just expressed is the flowering and just the explosion of that ball of energy that you have and the energy that comes through music and the energy that comes through drag.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited that you're the one that found it out.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you very much. I created music and drag. We heard it here. I created it. I flowered it. Thank you for that. No, but I was just always a crazy kid. And I knew when I got older and was developing sexuality and like really learning more about myself as a musician and as a queer kid, I was like, oh, where do I fit? What do I do? You know, and it was tough because I was really studying music very seriously. I went to college for that. And I hadn't done drag before my first year at college. But as soon as I got there, you know, I caught the drag bug through Rocky Horror. I was Frankenfurter at Rocky Horror. And I was like, oh, this is for life now. You know, like, this is great. What else can we do? You know, every day my brain would be like, oh, this is a great medium. This is a great discipline of craft and queerness because it's so much fun. You use your body as your medium. And, you know, I talk a lot, if you haven't noticed. I talk a lot no matter where I go. And that is just my power that I'm just like ready to go all the time. And I found that when I was dressed up in this glamorous armor and I was 9 feet tall, people listened. And I was like, this is great, you know? And also I play violin, you know? So, you know, I really had to push it down. A lot of people laughed at me. And I'll say this, a lot of people in the drag community, when I moved into Brooklyn, I hit the ground running. I was performing everywhere 20 plus years ago, you know? A lot of people were like, what? Classical music? That doesn't belong here in nightclubs. You know, a lot of people were like, what? It's not cool. And I was like, but I think it's cool. So I decided to make it effing cool. And I think it is cool when I do. I just had to convince people along the way. Now, vice versa, when I did my first orchestra or when I kept going to the orchestras, you know, I would be following Renee Fleming the weekend before, or Thierry Takanawa, or Itzhak Perlman, Hilary Hahn. And then it would be like Thorgy and the Thor Orchestra. And you would get these players that are some of the best in the world. And you walk into, you know, Toronto Symphony Orchestra. They're the amazing players, top of the, you know. And people look you up and down, you know, and they're like, who, what? So all, you know, string players are judgmental. We have no patience. And by the way, I sat usually concertmaster, most of these orchestras, doing the same thing, like, oh God, who's this now? But then you roll with it. But because they're perfectionists. String players are perfectionists. They don't like to waste time. When I got out there, I was like, my hardest thing was convincing all the players to enjoy what I was doing there, to relax a little bit, have more fun. And then I would make that joke and say, I know Hilary Hahn couldn't make it tonight, but you got me, you know, or something, you know, stupid. And they would like, I'd be like, all right, I'm getting some of you on board. And after we did the show and I was in, you know, full glamour and after the show and we did all these things because it's a variety show. My Thorgy and Thor Orchestra is a big variety show. I paint pictures. I play a lot. I do soliloquy with, you know, Mozart in the background. It's really, it's funny, but it's beautiful to symphonic music. And afterwards, I have all these players, some of them very conservative, come up to me and go, can I tell you something? I go, what? And they're like, this is the most fun I have ever had playing in the symphony, and I've been part of it for 19 years.
So about drag, let's get into the drag. You know, some of my question, how on earth do you do all the outfits all the time? Do you design yourself? Do you have a team? That seems like a full-time job alone, never mind the violin and the whole touring and the business, but I can barely get ready for this interview. Look what I'm wearing.
Well, thank you. So here's the thing. Oh, God, that's a convoluted question. I could go on and on. Yes, you know what? I wear certain things for certain gigs. If the budget's higher, I have more money to work with to hire a designer. You know, I can sew and I can make things that fit my body quickly if I need a new one of those, you know? But if I'm going to tailor a beautiful suit, I'm not tailoring a beautiful, you know, to get everything impeccable, I hire a designer. And I do have many different designers that I work with. If one of them's busy, I'll switch back and forth. Also, different designers charge different amounts. So, you know, or certain designers take a lot longer to produce things than other ones. So you have to be careful who you ask. But I like putting things on rotation. And you touched on something that I was going to say is the expectation to always show up in something new. Every single time you're being photographed is insanity.
What? I didn't rate it.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. Well, I understand if I'm gonna film a new season of Drag Race, I will go back and I'm not gonna pull things that I've worn before that have makeup stains on the collar, okay? But, you know, when I do gigs and it's the same kind of gig, I'm like, for instance, playing violin. If you look just at the physicality of doing this, you know, and you're mic'd, right? So you can't wear certain hair. No glue here because you have mic sets. And my arms need to be this. So there is nothing, if you watch, like there's nothing really constricting my shoulders. It gets very, very warm. No floor-length gowns that I'm going to trip on, because I move around a lot and I'm holding a violin with both hands. So, and I've learned that no jewelry. I can't wear any jewelry because the clicking and clacking gets picked up by the microphones. Mm-hmm. So little things you learn along the way where, you know, sound people, because I'm like, please just let me keep this earring on, please. And they're like, it just, you can hear it. And I'm like, all right. So it sucks. People are like, oh, she's not wearing any earrings. I'm like, all right. You know, sorry. You know, I don't know what to say. But things like that. So different outfits, different costumes. Also, Hollywood Bowl, isn't that outside?
Yes.
I'm really into royal blue right now. I don't know why. I go through.
That could work if it's a little glimmery.
Okay. Never black.
No.
I want to do a gown. The thing is with me, you call me a ball of energy. Physically, I'm lucky enough that my brain and my body can keep up with my brain still. But I move a lot. And when I'm playing and moving and I go to this side of the stage and that side of the stage, I like doing that. High kicks. I like bringing that energy. A gown is so restrictive to me. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm probably going to get canceled for this, but I don't care. No. So I was in the works, I mean, a year ago or whatever, with a Florida Symphony Orchestra. But because of everything going on with our administration and the bands, they called me and they said, yeah, we're going to have to put this show and this contract on the back burner. And I went, what? And, you know, I was a little like, I didn't know what was going on. And then I quickly was like frustrated and I looked it up and I talked to a lot of people and I went, oh my God, I'm like one of those performances. And whether or not you like it, most of these large symphony orchestras are funded by very religious, conservative people that come from money and their foundations. I really just feel like I'm me and my show is really, really interesting, amazing, funny, a little bit different, a little quirky, with beautiful music and cheeky humor. And I happen to be a man in a dress.
Does it shock you that you've got that reaction or that you're the victim, I guess, of this kind of legislation?
I think it takes a lot to shock me. I really just keep going. I don't get lost. I don't get upset. I just keep doing it. And I really do feel like just doing my show is the largest act of rebellion that you could possibly do when we have standing ovations and we're sold out anyway. And then I can convince some of the conservative members of the orchestra to be like, this was the best. I'm like, I know. I know.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you and get to know you. I do want to come backstage at the Hollywood Bowl, give you a nice big cuddle. Turn it out at the Hollywood Bowl on July 10th.
And who knows, maybe Grace Jones will show up. Maybe I can borrow her dress.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by David Hunt and Natalie Munoz and produced by Brian DeShazer, who was also this week's feature correspondent. You heard music from Camelot and Somewhere performed by Thorgi Thor. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Beaupre of Los Angeles, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WMPG Portland, Maine, KMUN Astoria, Oregon, GaySA Pretoria, South Africa, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.